There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1058, August 26, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say winning taste of orange crush for Team Papaya. Sargent again misses the beat. RB says we have the meat. Haas says we have the money. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
On today's program, the hunter now becomes the hunted. Logan Sargeant gets inducted into the Pastor Maldonado Hall of Fame. Fernando seen crouching behind the McLaren. And LCH says he's too slow. And how long will it take for Max to finally say, GP2, GP2 engine? On this week's interviews, we've got a little Lando Norris from his first days in single-seaters. We might throw in a little John Zalesi if we have time. And I do need to remind everybody, of course, that we need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. And I want to thank Tom Justice for his donation this week. Nas, welcome to the studio. How you doing?
Well, I did not see Mick Jagger on the pre-race grid. But pretty obvious change has come. And Checo remains under Max's thumb. It was very strange to see Lando do a Max on Max of all the places in the Netherlands. When was the last time somebody beat Max fair and square by 20 seconds? What was equally impressive was the happy and elated Zak Brown. Over the years, he has taken a lot of slings and arrows aimed at him. He has gone from L.A. to being El Jefe at a major Formula One team based on hard work and success. Sunday's race was a showcase of Palatial Studios' favorite. No package, no delivery. Before we do a quickie on Colli, can we get your brief on the race, por favor?
Well, you're right, Nas. It was an exciting race. If you were British, even Steven now, Max did not crash into Lando when Lando passed him. It was clean, so obviously the hunter is now the hunted. Clearly, winning by 20 seconds means that Lando is the new dominator. So, Quali was typical, except for, I don't know what happens to Mercedes. Sometimes they just get freaked out. I'm always happy that Fernando makes it to Q3. What's going on with Logan Sargeant? Dude, how many times? I mean, what's really sad is now teams are volunteering, contributing their reserve drivers to help Williams. So, I don't think I've ever seen that before, but I haven't been around that long. So, yes, indeed, qualifying was almost what we expected. I think we had the warning from Red Bull, we're not competitive, and sure enough, the only question is, Piastri is now, he needs to pick it up and be right up against Norris. And Norris needs to develop some charisma if he's going to dominate. He has to come up with a new hip style that's going to, you know, be trending soon. So that's my tip of the week, Nasser. Thank you.
Now we look at Colley. Before Colley, there was action and fiery drama when Logan Sargent had a heavy crash in free practice 3. Good news is he is okay, but I think it is high time now he calls Club Med for an extended vacation with Latifi and Mazepin. By the time we got to Q3, Albon was in, but two race winners from this season were missing, LCH and Carlito. Lando Norris was quick and set the fastest time in the final minutes of Q3. Then on his final qualifying lap, local yokel Max grabbed the pole position. This gave 15 seconds of delirium to the Dutch crowd before Lando pushed Max back into second place on the front row. Difference of 0.356 was impressive. Pole position is number 4 in the life and fast times of Mr. Lando Norris. This is the first time Mighty Max is not on pole in the last 4 races at the Seaside track.
It was a good lap, probably one of my better laps, you know, and I put everything together. Apart from turn 1, I think I was couldn't have been happier with the lap, so good. Probably didn't expect the gap to be so big, but also when I did the lap, I was very happy with it. And kind of expected nothing less than to probably have a bit of a gap to second place, you know. So I felt good out there. The car was feeling mega, and I was very confident out there. So always a good thing. I'm not feeling any pressure. I'm not feeling any of these things. You know, I'm just trying to do what I know I'm capable of doing. I work well with the team. The team are doing an amazing job. You know, we've got some good upgrades here. Everything's flowing well. Everyone's very motivated, and that's what you want from a...
Last year, front row featured same two drivers, but in reverse order. Row 2 was Piastri and Russell. Checo was in the top 5, but almost 0.4 second off the pace of his teammate, which I think is not bad for any number 2 at Red Bull, as long as they don't do a Sargent in the race. Alex Albon had his best qualifying result, starting 8th on row 4. Then came down the law, and he was disqualified. Reason? According to the FIA technical delegate, the floor body was found to lie outside the regulatory volume mentioned in Article 3.5.1a, which in plain simple English means the floor was illegal. LCH got a 3-grid place penalty for impeding Sergio Perez, like that will help Checo. In the business as usual case, Tsuchi Tsunoda out-qualified his teammate Honey Badger. Over at Haas, in the battle of the balls, the German ball rolled faster in Q2 than the Danish ball. Your two Dutch guilders on the Colley, senor.
Quality was great. Once again, Fernando makes it to Q3, LCH doesn't. That's all I need. But in the end, we're going into a new phase now. The McLaren phase, similar to, what was it, 2013? When Sebastian Vettel flipped it around and won the second half of the season, I think 9 straight. So yes, what goes around comes around. But I think Max was sort of prepared for this. He felt that the car was beginning to fall backwards, and they simply don't know why. So... Monza is going to be very interesting because McLaren is clearly at the top of their game.
Now we come to the race, the 2024 Dutch Grand Prix. The start was no surprise. Just like Leclerc has problem winning from pole position, Lando has problem keeping the lead at the end of the opening lap when starting from pole position. What was not a surprise was Max taking the lead going into turn 1, and out of the DRS zone at the end of the opening lap. This is not how you beat Mad Max. Russell, Piastri and Leclerc completed the top 5. Top 10 were all on mediums. K-Mag started from the pit lane after change of power unit. Your thoughts on the start of the race and the opening lap?
The start of the race was impressive. I mean, Max, once again... Good start, good clutch work, no wheel spin where clearly the McLarens had a lot of wheel spin. So unfortunately, it was a great start for Max. It was a classic start for Max. He did begin to pull away, quickly put the 1 second margin that he needed. But I was still waiting for Logan Sargeant to crash in the background, but that didn't happen. But very impressive start for everybody. It was a fairly clean getaway. Once, it's interesting how Norris takes a few laps to get comfortable with the tires and the cars. But once he does, he's outpacing everybody, including his teammate. And so I believe as this continues, this pattern continues between him and Piastri, we will see team orders.
After 10 of the 72 laps, top 5 remained the same, with Max pumping fast times and staying out of the DRS zone of Lando. LCH radioed, "I am too slow on the straight, but had moved up to 11th from his 14th starting place." And your favorite driver, Logan Sargeant, was up to 18th, right behind his teammate. Lap 11, Sainz Jr. sailed past Gasly to get into 7th, 3 seconds behind Checo. Lap 12, Lando starting to make his move, almost within DRS zone of Mighty Max. Lap 13, first pit stop of the race by Albon. Lap 14, LCH into top 10 after passing Lance. Up ahead, car number 14, El Machismo. 2 laps later, LCH says, "Adios, amigo," to Machismo. Lap 15, papaya car all over the Red Bull. Fans were getting restless. Max complaining, "My tires are just numb. They don't grip. Heat is on, game on." Lap 18, Lando Norris goes ahead of Max Verstappen, but still a long way to go in the 72-lap race. Lap 21, LCH all over Gasly like white on rice, and Leclerc all over Piastri. Lap 24, Lando ahead of Max by 3.4 seconds, and LCH comes into the pits to put on hard tires. Lap 25, Charles Leclerc in for new rubber. And Russell is told to box on lap 26. Max came in on lap 28, and as usual, the Red Bull crew did a quick job, 2.5 seconds for his pit stop. Next lap, it was Lando, and his McLaren team was quick too, but it was 3.1 seconds pit stop for the English driver. Top three, but yet to stop. Piastri, Perez, Sainz. Norris comes out fourth ahead of Max. After 30 of 72 laps, top 5, Piastri, Norris, Max, Leclerc, and Russell, as Carlito and Checo come in for tire change. On lap 34, Piastri dives into the pits, handing the lead to his teammate, who is almost 7 seconds ahead of Max by now. Pretty obvious papaya car has the pace, and Lando Norris is doing the business. Top 10 after lap 40, Norris almost 10 seconds ahead of Max. Third is Leclerc, about 4 seconds ahead of Piastri. Russell fifth, then Perez, Sainz, Hamilton, Hülkenberg, and Pierre Gasly. 3 laps later, Piastri was only 2 seconds behind Leclerc. It was looking like a papaya 1-3 or papaya 1-2, as we still had about 30 laps remaining. And that's a lot of racing. Sainz Jr. takes 6 from Checo on lap 47. The other Ferrari was now within DRS zone of Piastri. Lap 49, LCH is back in the pits for red tires, which was kind of a surprise, but very quickly he started setting fast laps. 20 laps to go, Lando had really checked out, as he was now 14 seconds ahead of Max. Who could have thought of this scenario last year or even at the beginning of the season? I have a feeling Checo may end up costing his team the Constructors' Championship, and that will really PO Dr. Marco. But time will tell. Russell brought into the pits on lap 55. Piastri still trying to pass Leclerc for the final step of the podium and unable to do so, despite being within DRS zone for a few laps. On lap 61, Gasly passed Hülkenberg for ninth. Behind Hülkenberg, a two-time world champion was trying to get into the points. Behind Machismo was his teammate Lance. Lance was given a five-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane, which means, after all, Pedro de la Rosa was el correcto. Lance is unleashing his talent even in the pit lane. With 10 laps remaining, dishes were really done for Max to go four in a row at Zandvoort, as he was now over 16 seconds behind Norris, and Piastri was running out of steam to get on the podium, which really surprised me. Lap 64, Machismo makes it into the points. The onboard camera on Norris's car showing the full lap 70, which was shown on the F1 TV. I'm not sure what the international feed was showing, but this full lap on lap 70 was really very impressive, and I enjoyed it very much. On to the final lap, ladies and gentlemen.
Pond geworden het circuit van Zandvoort. Want Lando Norris is binnen. Hij wint de wedstrijd. Hij is de beste. En hij doet dat met een enorme voorsprong op Max Verstappen.
Simply lovely, as Lando radioed the team. Norris did a max on Max. No more. It was a race we should have won. This is first McLaren victory at the Dutch seaside track since 1985, when Andreas Nicholas Lauda, also known as Nicky, took his final Grand Prix victory over his teammate, Le Professor Prost. And sir, I do remember, as I'm sure you do too, watching this race live in Cali, 5 in the morning. Beautiful. Second, 22 seconds behind, was Mr. Unbeatable at Zandvoort, Mr. Max Verstappen. Max took the lead at the start, but when he was unable to increase his lead by the usual 1 second per lap, I had an inkling Lando had a chance, barring any experimental pit strategy from the McLaren team. In the end, Max was happy with second in quali and second in the race. Minimum damage done to his possible fourth championship, which some people are now questioning, but I think he has big of a lead where he can handle Norris. Mr. Rogers, were you surprised someone could pass Max on the track and win by over 20 seconds? Especially when the name was not Fernando Alonso.
I was not surprised. You saw Max slowly doing the best he could, but the car is just not what it used to be. It's become a Hyundai when he used to have a Honda. So, and what is it? I mean, what's happened? Their DRS in the past was so powerful, and all that is gone. And I remember it went away in 2023, Monaco. Perez crashes, the cars get lifted up with cranes. Zach Brown, high def camera, click, 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 click. Now they're the fastest car. I love technology, Nasser, and this is excellent espionage.
Charles Leclerc got his second podium in a row by finishing third. He was third at Spa also. Apart from his home Grand Prix win, his best finish is second in Australia in March. He has scored points in all but three races so far this season. Fourth was the second McLaren of Piastri. I really thought he would take third from Leclerc, if not second from Max, but it was not to be. And the second Ferrari of Carlos Sainz Jr. came in fifth. So good to see both Ferraris in the top five, because the next race is their home Grand Prix. Max's commander Cody, the lost wingman Checo Perez, was sixth. Checo is still winless in 2024, but he had a strong start. Four podiums in the first five races. He has not been on the podium since the Chinese Grand Prix in April, and the next Grand Prix is in September. So I say to Checo, no bueno. The two Mercedes cars were seventh and eighth, Russell ahead of Hamilton. Kimi Antonelli will drive in free practice at Monza, and some are reporting that he is already signed for 2025. Pierre Gasly, ninth for Alpine, and Aston Martin's Spanish-born Fernando Alonso came in 10th to take the final point. Hombre always makes a point on and off the record. And just as some additional information, The race was 200th Grand Prix start for Max Verstappen. So good to start your 200th Grand Prix on your home soil. Just too bad he could not celebrate with the victory. And LCH, news came out that his longtime engineer Peter Bonington, also known as Bono, is not riding a prancing horse with him to Maranello. He has been promoted by Toto and will stay in Brackley. Yeah.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Now we come to, once upon a time, a Swiss court ruled Guido van der Garde had a valid contract to drive for Sauber and ordered the Swiss team to provide him a race seat at the Australian Grand Prix. Team principal Miss Monisha Kaltenborn, herself a legal beagle, thought she could do a Ray Charles on the disgruntled Dutch driver and tell him to hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more. Well, he did come back with barrister and bailiff, and that made the difference. Miss Kaltenborn had to call her bank on Monday and sing a new tune. Loan me a dime, I need to pay my old time used to be. A wise old man and professor from Harvard, George Santayana, once said, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Now, I'm not sure if Mr. Gene Haas went to Harvard Business School, but he thought he could do to his sponsor Uralkali, a fertilizer company owned by Papito of his discarded driver, Nikita Mazepin, what he did to the IRS. That was Stinko, and this turned out to be Stinko as well. Over the Dutch Grand Prix weekend, barrister and bailiff showed up in the paddock looking for Haas F1 team and singing their own tune. Have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day? And that did the magic trick. The team, which for 3 months used the excuse of sanctions against Russia for not complying with court order, promptly found a way, apparently through Middle East, to wire the amount. Some say the amount is $9 million, some say $12 million. Plus, also, they have given Uralkali possession of a 2021 F1 car, all this as part of their sponsorship agreement. Their trucks were not allowed to leave the circuit after the race on Sunday. At this time of recording, Uralkali has now confirmed money in the bank and car in the garage. Hopefully, Haas trucks will be on the road again and singing merrily like Willie Nelson all the way to Parco Monza. I am surprised they did not use the services of their own sponsor MoneyGram to send the money. But I guess MoneyGram has closed their offices in Moscow. Mr. Rogers, you play with millions and millions of Turkish liras. Did you pay much attention to this wonderful paddock drama?
You know, I think this whole thing is very bizarre, but we've seen it before in the past with smaller teams. And sure enough, I would have thought that Mr. Haas over in North Carolina would have written the check for $9 million. But trust me, no one likes writing a check like that. So I can understand, but at least they're on their way to Monza. I've heard over the wire that everything is good and the check did not bounce. So, whew, that was a close one, but a little bizarre. It's weird. The Russians keep nipping at Haas, and they use. The Russians are a big Haas customer. So this is another part of the story that is not talked about too much. Nasser?
Now we move on to the saga of Sargent. The boy from Boca Raton has certainly missed the beat in the cutthroat world of Formula One. While many complain young drivers do not get enough testing miles, which is true, but we are not living in an age where there are only 6 or 7 Formula One races in a season. 3 to 5 days of preseason testing, 20 plus races, 3 practice sessions, and 1 qualifying session per race weekend is more than enough time to get going before your rookie season is over. That is, if you have Formula One pedigree and performance. We have seen this movie many times before, starring Mick Schumacher not too long ago. But Antonio Liuzzi and Giorgio Pantano also came into Formula One with very impressive junior Formula career and achievements. Sargeant CV in junior ranks is also very impressive. World champion in karting, he fought till the final round of the Formula 3 championship against a driver none other than Oscar Piastri, and Logan was very impressive in his first year of Formula 2. But Formula 1 is another level. In almost 2 years at the top echelon of motor racing, he has never rattled the cage of his teammate, but has kept the body shop very busy. Rumors and vultures are already circulating that we may not see Logan at Monza, and his replacement may be Liam Lawson or Mick Schumacher. Mick would be more of the same based on his 2 years in Formula One, but I hope we do see Liam Lawson, as he has already been promised a seat in Formula One by Red Bull next season, so it will be good for him to get some more experience. So time has come for Logan to head for the mountains and head for Busch. As the curtain comes down on his Grand Prix career, one can only accept the harsh reality. Logan was no Cool Hand Luke of Formula One. What we have here is a failure to perform. Mr. Rogers, the last two full-time American Express charges, Scott Speed and Logan Sargeant, were pretty much declined by the F1 fraternity. What is your take on the Sargeant saga?
I think he needs to be replaced right away. I mean, listen, how much punishment can an F1 team take? I mean, they call him now Logan the Destroyer Sargeant. So I think it's called the WWE, Hulk Hogan and the Destroyer, Sunday night at 10. What do you think?
Looking forward to the next season, Williams have a very good driver lineup in Carlos Sainz Jr. and Alex Albon. Let's hope they have a competitive car, without which no good driver is going nowhere. One thing I will say, Mr. James Vowles is very high on Alex Albon, like he is some sort of Senna of Siam. Obviously, Alex is very quick, otherwise he will not be in Formula One. But looking at his time in Junior Series, and especially as teammate to Max, I think he's more like Bottas of Bangkok than Senna of Siam. What say you, Duke of Dijon?
He does. He does like Albon and gives him everything, including the car. If there's only one left, Albon gets it. And there's a good reason. I mean, Albon has cost him less money and is given, and it's paid off with some points. So Sargeant needs to go. We need to say aloha. And I've never seen a driver that is completely incompetent last so long in Formula One. So please help me. Who else has done this? And on the Senna of Siam, well, you know, when your teammate is destroying everything and Albon is making it into Q3, it does make him look good. And people forget about Max. Albon is doing a great job at a backmarker team, which is where he should be. I think it's great for development. He does have talent and he's been with some top teams. So good for Vowles. I think things will change once Carlos gets there and there's a real balance of driver power. Gracias.
Okay, now let's take a look at the Drivers' Championship. Max is leading with 275 points. Lando second on 225. Leclerc third, 192. Piastri fourth, 179 points. Completing the top five is Carlos Sainz Jr. with 172. Then we have Hamilton, 6th, 154 points. Perez, 7th, 139 points. Russell, 8th with 122. Machismo, Fernando Alonso, 9th with 50 points. And then his daddy's little Jim Clark and his teammate Lance Stroll, 10th, 24 points. Three drivers remain pointless, both the Kick Sauber drivers, Guan Yu Zhou and Valtteri Bottas and Logan Sargeant. Mr. Rogers, do you think Max has any chance of losing the Drivers' Championship this season?
Yes, Max can indeed lose mathematically. I don't think he's going to lose the Drivers' Championship. But the Constructors' Championship is definitely up for grabs, especially with Perez. You never know where he's going to be. So if he continues to stay out of Q1 and Q2, they're in big trouble. But if you can make it to Q3 more often, then that's their only chance. But wow, can you imagine Zach Brown with a Constructors' Championship? Whew, he's a big man now. Wow.
Now let's take a look at the Constructors' Championship. This is getting harum scarum for Red Bull, I think. They are still number one with 434 points, but McLaren is too close for comfort with 404 points. We still have 9 races to go. That is a lot of points on the table for McLaren to turn the tide. Next round is at the Temple of Speed, and the pace shown by Norris and Colley and Reyes looks like the wind and wind is blowing their way at Parco Monza. Going into the home Gran Premio, Ferrari is third in the championship with 370 points. Mercedes is fourth on 276 points. Both their drivers have tasted success this season after a winless 2023 campaign. Fifth is Aston Martin with 74 points, 50 of those points coming from one driver. Who could that be? Here's a hint. His Papito does not own the team. Red Bull's B-Team Visa Cash App RB is 6th with 34 points. Haas is looking good despite a visit by the lawman in 7th place with 27 points. More than double of the next team on 13 points, Alpine. Speaking of which, I think it's time for some Aquafina break.
Thank you, Nass. Why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, hello, I'm Jean Lizy, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the young rising talent of British motor racing scene, Mr. Lando Norris. Lando, good to see you. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
This is your first year of motor racing, right?
Second year in cars. Last year I did the Ginetta Junior Championship.
Tell us about that car. How big is that car and what age can you race in that series?
So you can race from 14.
Oh, wow.
That's why I did it last year, because it was the only sort of car championship I could really do. And it's a good car to learn in. It's on a road tyre, so it moves around a lot. So you're never really under the limit. But you could be, but if you're fast, you have to be over the limit a lot of the time. So yeah, it's a good car to learn in.
So in the last 3 years, you've gone from karting to tin tops to single-seater racing. Which has been the most fun?
They're all quite equal, to be honest. Yeah, I couldn't really pick one out.
Now, England is the center of motor racing, where cars are turning right and left. Tell me how you develop interest in motorsport. Was there any interest in the family?
Not massively. My dad watched a few Grand Prix and stuff with his dad quite a few years ago. But no, it's just one day my dad took me to the local kart track. Luckily there was a race going on, the British Championships. And I said, oh, like a go, anything like that. For my 7th birthday, I got a go-kart. Yeah, and it all kind of started from there.
Were you quick? Like, you know, some kids are quick from day one. Were you one of those kids?
I don't think I was anything special. I'm not sure really how everyone starts up when they first get in the kart and everything, but I enjoyed it a lot. I wanted to keep doing more and more and more. And I think that's when I started to improve a lot as I've become what I am today.
Okay, and how long were you in karting?
7 years. So I started racing when I was 8 and stopped at the end of last year. So last year I did the Ginetta and I also did the karting. So it was a mix of both.
In your life as a karting racer, what were some of your big achievements that you're very proud of?
Firstly was the Junior European Champion, which is really good. In 2014 I also finished... 2013, sorry, I finished 4th in the World Championship as well. And then last year I finished, I think, 4th in the European Championship and was the youngest ever Senior World Champion.
That's very impressive. Yeah. Now, in karting, strictly karting days, who are some other drivers who you will not be surprised if you are knocking on the door of Formula One and they are doing the same thing? What would those names be?
I don't know, really.
Nobody was as good as you are?
Yeah, there are a lot of people.
Like some karter you respect as hard racers. Hard and fair racers.
I think Dan Ticktum. I kind of I don't know when we start, when he started, but we've been racing in a similar category since I think I was 9 or 10, and he's been always really fast. It's been aggressive, fair, but yeah, I think we've had a lot of good racing together.
And in your tin top career, 1 year of Ginetta, how did you do in that?
I finished third in the end. It's not too bad, considering, yeah, it's my first year in cars. I think 4 wins, so yeah, I think it's a good first season. Yeah, but mainly a good kind of way to start racing career.
Now, this is round two today, this weekend at Donington, and you had 3 races at Brands. You won 2 of them, I am told, or I read on the website, and then you were, one of the wins was taken away from you, and I guess your team is appealing. Question is, when you found out the win has been taken, did you cry? We want the truth now.
I didn't cry, but I was really unhappy. Almost crying, on the edge. But
that's only human.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
So what happened there? What's your version of the story?
Well, basically, I got told there was a safety car out. Someone overtook me at that point because I slowed up. And then he let me get past later on under the safety car. And the clerk of the course said, because the other driver that overtook me wasn't there at the time, he said that I overtook under the safety car and under yellow flags. So that was the reason for getting excluded, but yeah.
Now, you and Tictum are doing very well in this series, which is so young. I'm sure you want to win the championship. Apart from him, are any of the drivers you think will become big challengers for you guys?
I think my teammates. I don't think I've ever been much faster than them. They've always been pressuring me a lot, and obviously helped out a lot as well. So I think both my teammates are really good.
Names, please.
Colton Herter and Petru Florescu. So yeah, we'll start off with them. But yeah, there's a lot of others. So there's so Ricky Collard, Sandy Mitchell, Enam Ahmed. I don't know, it's going to be close. There's going to be a lot of close racing coming this year.
Okay, as a proud British racer, the question is, Jenson Button or Lewis Hamilton?
Racing of Lewis Hamilton, but personality of Jenson Button.
What about girlfriend? I think Lewis has an edge, or at least with the ex.
Yeah.
Okay, how about we have listeners all over the world, including quite a few here in England, and 2 of them are with me. How about a message to our listeners, and please tell them about your website also.
To, would you say, lessons?
No, a message for, tell them, hey, dude, go to my website.
I don't know, I'd like to say a big thank you first to everyone that's supported me so far. And yeah, if you haven't already, go check out my website, landonnorris.com. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And yeah, hopefully see you all soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ben, I wish you all the best. I know you're...
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and racing regards. Kiwi is landing in F1 soon. Dr. Marco has spoken, which means someone's F1 dream is broken. Dr. Helbert Marco has confirmed that Liam Lawson from New Zealand, who made his debut in the Dutch Grand Prix last year, will be in one of the Red Bull cars. The choices are 2 for Dr. Marco. Chop chop on Aussie mate, or chop chop on the Mexican. No Red Bull Junior is gonna rattle the cage of Max. So the question at the main Red Bull team becomes, shall we keep the numero dos fino, or we bring in another junior to the Dutch abattoir? Whoever becomes Max's teammate, I can hear Mr. T saying, I pity the fool.
But I pity the fool.
Now we come across the pond and go all the way to Pacific Northwest for IndyCar racing from Portland, Oregon. Surprise pole position for Santino Ferrucci. as you may recall, he made quite a name for himself in Formula 2. He gave AJ Foyt's team the first pole position in IndyCar racing in 10 years. So that was good for him and for the team. The race was dominated by Team Penske driver Will Power from Land Down Under. Second was Alex Palou from Spain and driving for Ganassi team. And he was supposed to drive for Zak Brown also, but that's another legal case. Joseph Newgarden, a man from Tennessee, also driving for Team Penske, was third. Now let's take a look at a couple of support races in Portland. IndyNex, which is the American version of Formula 2, race winner was Josh Abel over Louis Foster, and Louis Foster most likely will win the championship this year. USF Pro 2000 Series. The final countdown for this series took place over the past weekend, and we have a champion. He is from Gold Coast, Australia, Lockie Hughes. We have interviewed this mate a couple of times. Good racing talent. Winning this championship will get him a heavily subsidized seat in IndyNex in 2025. Now, sir, we go back to Zandvoort, the Dutch Grand Prix track, and take a look at drivers who took their maiden wins at Zandvoort. We shall start with Joe Bonnier. His 1959 victory driving a BRM made Bonnier the first driver from Sweden to win a Formula One championship race. Joe came from a family that owned a large publishing business in Sweden, and he himself owned an art gallery in Geneva. He was killed at Le Mans in 1972. Next, Wolfgang von Trips. He was a German count and came from the same area as Michael Schumacher, area called Kirpin near Cologne. In 1961, he won two races. The first one was at Zandvoort and the second at Aintree near Liverpool, England. In the season finale at Monza, he was fighting for the championship with his Ferrari teammate Phil Hill. After touching wheels with the car of Jim Clark, his car went into the crowd, killing over a dozen spectators and the driver. Next, Graham Hill. His Dutch treat came in 1962, the season he won his first of two championships. I saw his car BRM P57 at the Autosport show in Birmingham, England some years ago. It is amazing how small this car is. I think today's Formula 3 car is bigger. But I love the vertical exhaust pipes on the BRM. Beautiful design. Now we come to 1975 at Zandvoort, a race I remember very, very well. James Hunt did a JB, taking a very impressive win, maiden win, of course, over Niki Lauda's Ferrari in changing condition. He used to call Lord Haskett the Good Lord, and this car was designed by Dr. Harvey Postlewhite. Next, we come to American success, first and last, at Zandvoort. Both are the same. Mario Andretti became the first American winner of the Dutch Grand Prix back in 1978, with his Lotus teammate Ronnie Peterson second. Sadly, to this day, this remains not only the last Dutch Grand Prix, but any Formula One Grand Prix won by an American driver. Music from Bach, we go back in the month of August over the years to remember drivers who left us in this month. We shall start with Jean Péra, one of the greats of French motor racing. He took part in 53 Grand Prix races. His best finish was a pair of second place finishes in 1956 and 57, both in Argentina with Maserati. His claim to fame also include punching Ferrari team manager Romolo Tavoni after the French Grand Prix, and this led to Enzo showing him the exit door. Péra raced a Porsche in a sports car race during the 1959 German Grand Prix weekend at Avos street race and crashed to his death on August 1st. Mark Donohue, the man with an engineering degree from Brown University in Rhode Island, gave Roger Penske his first Indy 5 victory at the Brickyard in 1972. Their partnership was successful in Can-Am and Trans-Am also. Mark also won a NASCAR race at Riverside, Roger entered a McLaren in the 1971 Canadian Grand Prix, and Mark was on the podium in third in his Formula One debut. Roger was going to enter his own team in the 1975 season. Per his request, Mark came out of retirement, and it was at the Österreichring in 1975 that Mark crashed during Sunday's morning warm-up session after a puncture on left front tire. He suffered internal head injuries and passed away 2 days later on August 19 in a Graz hospital at the age of 38. And you know, Emerson Fittipaldi was in this race, and after the crash, he did walk up to Mark. And according to him, Mark looked fine and was able to talk also, but the internal injuries were just too much. Next, we have Patrick Depailler. He was from Clermont-Ferrand, which is also home to Michelin Tire Company. Depailler started in motorcycle and was helped in his early racing career by Jean-Pierre Beltoise. He took his maiden win in 1978 at Monaco, driving for Ken Tyrrell, who always had a French driver when Elf Petroleum was sponsoring the team. Today, Elf, along with FINA from Belgium, is owned by Total Energy Group. Depailler was testing at Hockenheim Ring in 1980 when he suffered a high-speed crash and died in the arms of his Alfa Romeo teammate Bruno Giacomelli on August 1, 1980, of course. Now we come to Didier Pironi. His father owned a construction business in Paris. Pironi was well-educated, had a pilot's license, and was fast in racing cars. He was second to René Arnoux in the European Formula 2 Championship and won Le Mans with his fellow Frenchman Jean-Pierre Jossot for Renault, who died recently. Pironi's first victory came in the 1980 Belgian Grand Prix. In 1981, he joined Ferrari as teammate to Gilles Villeneuve, and we all know how this went down at Imola, Zolder, and Hockenheimring, all in 1982, a very sad season indeed. Unable to race car, Pironi turned to powerboat racing, which took his life and the life of two of his crew members on August 23, 1987, off the coast of Isle of Wight near England. Next is Phil Hill. Probably the only world champion who started a racing career with a victory and also won his last ever race. Hill was born on the right coast in Florida, but moved as a young boy with his family to Santa Monica, California, where his papito was postmaster. His racing CV is impressive. First American-born driver to win Le Mans, a race he won three times. He also recorded three wins in the Sebring 12 Hours. In 1960 at Monza, he became the first American-born winner in Formula One and took the title as the first American world champion the following year, both with Ferrari. You know, he did one good thing. When he was hired by Ferrari, he moved to Modena and learned Italian. His final race was the 1967 BOAC International 500 at Brands Hatch, which he won with Mike Spence in a Chaparral. Hill was suffering from Parkinson's disease and passed away on August 28, 2008. He was 81 years old. Next, Guy Ligier. Rugby player, racing driver, team owner, and man who built many Route Nationale highways in Francia. He was a good friend of Joe Schlesser, who perished in a fiery crash during the 1968 French Grand Prix at Rouen. The JS, in the name of all Ligier racing cars, was in his memory. The day of days for an all-French victory in Formula One came in 1977 at Anderstorp, when Mario Andretti's Lotus ran out of petrol in the dying minutes of the Swedish Grand Prix, and Jacques Lafitte won the race in his beautiful Ligier Matra with that instant frisson Gitan logo. Guy Ligier passed away at the age of 85 on August 23, 2005. Monsieur Rogers, we may not agree on many things, but we do agree on the beauty of Gitan and Sev Marshall logos and Ortega Burger at Flames in San Jose. Please say so.
Absolutely, Gitan. I have a Gitan ashtray right in the F1 Weekly studios. I have a beautiful SEV Marshall metal plate in the F1 Weekly studios, reminding me of those great days at Le Mans. And of course, the Ortega Burger at San Jose is a classic and still on the menu today at our local Denny's.
And finally, we come to Chris Amon, one of the great racing talents who not only failed to win the championship, but for one silly reason or another was unable to win a Formula One championship race. He did win some Formula One races, but they were non-championship events. He was called the unluckiest driver. His response was, "I am the lucky one." Then he would take a long list of names like Jim Clark, his friend Bruce McLaren, his teammate at Ferrari, Lorenzo Bandini, and Jochen Rindt. Chris Amon passed away on August 3, 2016, at the age of 73. He was suffering from cancer. Okay, sir, now we go. Now we have to remember Darrell Waltrip. So we will go boogity, boogity, let's go racing, boys. Once upon a time, far across in the NASCAR nation, there were some great races with wonderful names. Let's take a look at some of them. And I'm very happy to say Mr. Rogers, because in those days, I used to watch all NASCAR races, truck races, everything. So I remember watching all these races with wonderful names. So back in 2015, there was a race called SpongeBob SquarePants 400. In 2008, we had Hefty Odor Block 200. Now, nothing like a good corporate battle on Madison Avenue. In 2020, we had Big Machine Hand Sanitizer 400 powered by Big Machine Records. Now, Big Machine Records was started by a gentleman by the name of Scott Borchetta. He is a big racing fan and was instrumental in bringing the IndyCar to Nashville, Tennessee. And he's also a racing driver in Trans Am and other series. His other claim to fame is he discovered Taylor Swift, who swiftly delivered him the Johnny Paycheck classic, "Take This Job," and shove it, and went to another record label. Now, in 2022, we had one of my favorites. Call 811 Before You Dig 250, powered by call811.com. Now, we all know you spend a lot of time gardening. Did you ever call 811, or you only call numbers starting with 9? We want the truth, Mr. Rogers.
I always call 811 before I dig, Nasser.
Finally, the most delicious name in 2001, we had In Living Color, Pork, the Other White Meat 400. And I would like to thank and acknowledge Miss Elizabeth Blackstock for a wonderful name game story on Planet F1. Credit where it's due. Next, we move on to a very serious matter, and I'm calling it Rage of the Race. This news came as a big disappointment for me. Indianapolis Motor Speedway has decided to auction off incredible historic non-Indy 500 cars they have in their portfolio. This includes the incredible 1955 Mercedes W196 Streamliner. The W196 was the complete opposite of W13, winning on Mercedes' return to Grand Prix racing in 1955 at Reims with Fangio at the wheel. Stirling Moss took his maiden win with the W196 at Aintree in England same year. The Indianapolis Museum also has the 1965 Le Mans winning Ferrari of Jochen Rindt and Maston Gregory. They also have Rudolf Caracciola's winning trophy from the Tripoli Grand Prix, and I cannot tell you how much chills and how long freeze frame I was when I discovered this just by chance a few years ago when I was at the museum. The cars will be auctioned off by R.M. Sotheby, and it will be a shame if the end result is such historical cars being shipped out of the United States. All this from a place calling itself Racing Capital of the World. I understand cash is king, but Mr. Rogers, since you are into vintages and memorabilia, what say you on the possibility of such gems being shipped out of the US of A?
It's very possible. The cash is over there. And it's good to see a lot of these cars go back to where they belong. I mean, some of the stuff that they have in the Hall of Fame is extremely rare and unbelievable, especially World War II, post and pre.
Speaking of cash, Liberty Media has announced it is selling a $825 million stake in Formula One to fund the purchase of MotoGP. The deal announced in April was valued at $4.2 billion for 86% of shareholding from Dorna, and the remaining stake will stay with the MotoGP management. And sir, finally we come to famous last words. For this we go back to the opening lap of the 2009 Brazilian Grand Prix and the clash between Adrian Sutil and Jarno Trulli, which rocked the Casbah and the press conference before the next race in Abu Dhabi. Thank you for listening. Boys will be boys. Bye-bye till we meet again behind palatial walls.
Thank you, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Good night.
I think there's nothing to discuss. You know, it's quite obvious incident. In the end, it was very disappointing for myself. I think even more because I was the one who were driving and he lost control of his car and crashed in my back. So it was not my problem. It was his problem. I don't know why he's freaking out like that, to be honest.
If you want, I can show you some pictures. So probably, I don't know if you're blind, but it can clearly show you that my front wing is next to your front wing. So that's...
But you're trying to overtake me outside on the curbing, you know. There was not a problem.
Ah, so you mean that...
But you were
you didn't
just not
move
going...
There.
No, you were just not going off the power, you know. The same happened in Barcelona where you lost control again and crashed again into a Force India car. You know, you have to sometimes also...
I just lost
control. Expect the limits of the car, you know. If there's no way to go, you have to back off. That's how the racing is, and I don't know how long you want to learn it, you know.
In Barcelona, I spun, and he hit me because he cut the curb. He cut completely the circuit, and he didn't slow down. So basically, anyway, I think
well,
it's
you,
better.
No. Watch the race in Barcelona. I didn't hit you. You hit me. I mean, I don't know what's the problem, but maybe your eyes
have
problem.
Anymore.
I don't know.